Hi, this is Darla Bruno at darlabrunolifecoaching.com, and I'm on the line with Pam Killeen. She's a nutritional consultant who practices nutritional balancing, and she's also the author of Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic, which you can find on her website, pamkilleen.com, P-A-M-K-I-L-L-E-E-N. I'm going to be talking with her today about the five prongs of nutritional balancing, which include things like getting enough sleep and taking the right supplements. Nutritional balancing is a program that I'm on, and I know many people facing burnout and adrenal fatigue have used and healed from. The program is part biochemistry, pathology, physiology, stress theory, and nutrition. It's complex. And my goal here today is to break it down so that people interested in this program can get a better understanding of what's involved. So hello, Pam.
Hi, Darla. How are you today?
Good. I'm happy to have you on the line.
It's great to be here.
You've referred to nutritional balancing as, you've also called it biochemical restoration.
That's right. I actually prefer the term biochemical restoration because I think it really hones in more on the concept behind what we're doing here, which is to repair or restore one's biochemistry. I think nutritional balancing, even though that's the formal term, it's a good term. I don't have anything against it, but I think it's too broad. I think people, when I mention the word nutritional balancing to people, they always invariably say back to me, oh, I eat really, really well, therefore I am balancing my nutrition. So I don't think it's as specific a term as I would like, but nevertheless, that is the formal term associated with this program. When you mentioned it's complex, Darla, that's the tip of the iceberg. It is extremely complicated to understand nutritional balancing or biochemical restoration. It's not easy, and it does take quite a bit of surrender, number one, and number two, it does take one to look at health in an entirely different manner. So rather than looking at a symptoms-based approach to where people are out looking for a remedy and saying, I'm going to take X to treat Y, that's not what we're doing here. We're looking deep under the hood of the car to see what's causing the symptoms in the first place, and that has to do with one's biochemistry, which in simple terms involves looking at the balance of minerals in the body or the lack of balance in minerals in the body and what's causing that imbalance to happen in the first place.
Yeah, and I was just going to, I have this little bit from your website that I was going to read that underlines, I think, what you just said. You wrote, illness develops in stages. Years of physical, biochemical, and emotional stressors deplete the body of nutrients, cause the accumulation of toxic metals, and disturb the body chemistry. Deep healing is a reversal of this degenerative process and is far more than just eliminating symptoms. Symptom removal is a very popular approach, but the program I use works at a much deeper biochemical level.
That's right. It does. And another aspect or characteristic of this program is that one needs to expect to feel worse first. I always get my clients very, very prepared for the detoxification that happens because of the years of accumulation of these imbalances. So as the toxicity essentially comes to the surface, people need to be prepared for the release of this toxicity. And when these toxins come out, yes, it's a very, very uncomfortable feeling. And Darla, this is the paradox of nutritional balancing. This is what sort of hits people in the face when they're doing nutritional balancing, is that when you start off the program, and people, a lot of people start off this program in burnout, which is what you mentioned earlier, so they're already dealing with very uncomfortable feelings. And when they start unleashing what I call the hornet's nest, you know, especially a lot of these trapped, the heavy metals or unwanted metals that are trapped in the body, when they start to come out, it makes people feel more uncomfortable. So you see the conundrum that practitioners are in, because people start off very, very sick, and that's a terrible state to be in, I agree with. I was there. I know what it feels like. It's mm-hmm. not as if I don't have any empathy. I do. It's just people have to be prepared for feeling worse as the metals start to come out. And I call it a necessary evil, because if the metals don't get stirred up, if you're not feeling worse first before feeling better, then I view it as something is going wrong. I've seen this in certain individuals, for example, who are really not getting the rest that they need. They're really not allowing the adrenal glands to subside and be at a state of peace. So some people I see very stuck sometimes in their fatigue or their depression because they're not allowing the healing to take place. I've seen other people be stuck simply because for example, just off the top of my head, I've seen people be stuck who are drinking well water because they're just continuously contaminating their body with what Dr. Wilson calls the three amigos, the manganese, iron, and aluminum. That some people can stay very, very stuck in the state of fatigue or depression simply because they're not allowing the metals to come to the surface, that they just keep putting these metals in their body and they keep storing. And so they don't really go through the detox like I would wish that they would. I've seen that on more than one occasion, several occasions actually. And so when people aren't allowing the detoxification to take place, it's going to be a very slow ride for them. They're not going to see some of the things I think that even you and I talked about before, where you know people feel absolutely horrible. And to me, when people email me or call me and tell me how horrible they feel, that's almost music to my ears because I'm saying, oh, good, now the metals are coming out. It's no wonder you feel worse. But when people aren't complaining of feeling worse, then I see a red flag typically. And I have to go through a list of things that may or may not be happening in their lives that could be slowing down or preventing them from progressing.
So just to be clear, the people that are approaching you generally have, they're showing signs of burnout and adrenal fatigue, but they may be coming to you with other, this isn't just a program for people with adrenal fatigue or chronic fatigue. I mean, this can treat a lot of different
Right. That's interesting. It's interesting you said that, and I should really bring. I'm glad you brought this up. The word treatment, because one of the things around nutritional balancing that we're trained in is to say that we're not treating the actual condition per se. And there's some legal reasons why, but more mm-hmm. fundamentally, what we're doing is actually restoring the biochemistry so that whatever symptoms the individual has, you know, should go away. So we're not really treating things like chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, OCD. I mean, I see a full gamut of people sick with, you know, dozens of different conditions. I work with people who have epilepsy, Parkinson's. I work with people who are struggling with cancer even. I mean, I'm working with a lot of different illnesses and even children with learning or behavior issues. And so I'm not really treating, though, their conditions. What I'm doing is working with their biochemistry. So, and that's an important concept to understand, especially if people are thinking about becoming practitioners. It's just about semantics, really, but it's so the level at which we work is so incredibly deep that, you know, let me just take a step backwards here. If somebody tells me their symptoms, tells me whatever addictions they may have. That's interesting to know. I'm glad to know it, but it doesn't affect essentially the protocol that we use because we're just looking at the biochemistry. We're fixing the biochemistry so that the whatever symptoms they're manifesting should go away. And this was the genius, absolute genius of the work of Dr. Paul Ek. And now his protege is one of his students, Dr. Wilson, of course, has carried on with his work. But Dr. Ek, he had the genius to say this to himself. He said, here's somebody who is sick. Let me look at their biochemistry. And then he would compare the sick person's biochemistry to the biochemistry of somebody who's healthy. And see, he did all of the hard work for people like you and me, Darla. He painstakingly studied the biochemistries of these people and monitored what would happen to them in using certain nutritional supplements. So he actually was able to figure out exactly what was needed to move somebody's particular biochemistry so that eventually, gradually, this was through constant monitoring, that the sick person's biochemistry would eventually match the biochemistry of the healthy person. And as this transition happened in their biochemistry, whatever symptoms they had essentially would dissipate. So, I mean, I am ever so grateful for the work of Dr. Ek because I can't imagine the level of patience it took him to develop these formulas. These formulas are extremely precious, very powerful, I have clients who start taking these formulas and sometimes report back to me that they feel them working within 20 minutes of taking them. Now, that's not across the board, of course, but that's how powerful they can be in certain individuals. And again, as I say, as people are taking these formulas and we're unleashing this hornet's nest, the side effects or the effects of the detoxification, unfortunately, can be very, very, very uncomfortable. And this is why, when I'm working individually with people, I do tweak the protocols in order to try and make the ride as comfortable as possible. So in some cases, Darla, what I have to do is I have to minimize what I call the core supplements. In other words, I outline for people what their core supplements are from Endomet, from the lab. And then what they do is they tweak those supplements so that they can slow down their detoxification effects. Alternatively, another approach that we use to help make the ride as comfortable as possible for people is I actually insist on people doing the coffee enemas and the saunas, because as we stir up that hornet's nest, if and when people are not doing the coffee enemas and the saunas, I see far more problems happening in these individuals because they're not necessarily using these strategies to help minimize their detoxification. In other words, we want to make sure that the metals are finding their way out through the skin, hence the importance of the saunas, and also we want to make sure that the metals are finding their way out through bile, hence the importance of doing the coffee enemas. So I'm not sure if that makes sense so far. I can elaborate on that some more if you'd like.
Yeah, we'll elaborate. And I just want to back up and ask two questions. One is that when you're talking about the biochemistry of an individual, this is a program that is based on individuals. It's not a one-size-fits-all, and you determine that biochemistry by the hair mineral analysis.
That's so right. We start off with the hair analysis. You're absolutely right. From ARL, that's the only lab that I'm comfortable using. I could use other labs, but I prefer the lab ARL.
So people send in their hair analysis, and this is what determines their biochemistry, which is a reading. I've gotten two so far, and it's a printout, and it shows me my sodium levels, my potassium levels, calcium, magnesium, all of the minerals. And possible toxicity, metal toxicity.
That's right. And it's a really difficult way. We can't really look at these test results in a black and white way. In other words, we can't look at these test results literally. And it's tempting to do so. For example, so if you see low iron, it's tempting to think, oh, your iron is low, therefore you're going to take iron and fix the problem. Or you might see your sodium is low, your potassium is low, and you might intuitively think, to fix this, I just need sodium or potassium. I mean, that seems logical, but unfortunately, that's not how minerals work in the body. We wouldn't fix sodium and potassium by giving people sodium or potassium. We wouldn't fix iron simply by giving people iron. And then the other thing about the test, if anybody has had the test done, of course, is when you see something, if you see something that is landing in the ideal zone, it doesn't mean that it's ideal. This is the very tricky part of interpreting the HTMA, the hair analysis. And this is why I'm fortunate to have been trained by Dr. Wilson, is because when people come to me from other labs, typically the test has not been interpreted properly because the people at the labs aren't necessarily trained to identify the hidden things that are going on, the things that are going on behind the scenes that we can't see as yet, because we need to pull out metals, kind of like peeling off layers of an onion. And as we see changes happening in people, then we'll see some of the hiding that is going on with regards to some of these metals. And the reason why we can't see everything is because Mother Nature designed it so that when metals overaccumulate in the body, at the same time as you have an overaccumulation, you will have a deficiency. So even something that seemingly as safe as calcium, people think calcium is a very safe mineral, and it is. But when it overaccumulates in the body, it could kill you. And so Mother Nature knows this. And so what she decided to do was hide metals as they overaccumulate in the body, so that the host will stay alive. I always say Mother Nature played a terrible trick on us by choosing to do this, simply because as these metals go into hiding and therefore they become bio unavailable, that as they go into hiding, we can feel half dead, you see. We feel half dead when they're in hiding, when they're bio-unavailable. We may look alive. You may look radiantly healthy, but inside you're feeling like, oh, you know, just dread. You just feel horrible. And so to get these metals out of hiding is the true art and science behind nutritional balancing. This is not easy to do. And we're going to talk about the five prongs, Darla. And before we do, I'll preface everything by saying, quickly, I'll go over the five prongs very quickly, and I want to just say something in advance, that the five prongs are the near-infrared saunas, the coffee enemas, the resting, three square meals a day, and the testing and the targeted supplements. Now, okay. I would love to take out, you know, that people didn't have to swallow pills. I would love to take out the testing. I'd love to take out that prong, but I really can't do this without the targeted supplements, because without the targeted supplements, we can't pull these metals out of hiding. So just doing, for example, the near-infrared saunas and the coffee enemas are essentially, they're doing a surface cleaning. They're not going to be able to go in and pull the metals out from the deeply sequestered areas of the bodies. That's what I need the supplements for.
Okay, so before we go into more detailed discussion of the five prongs, one more question about the metals is, when people are, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who said, well, I don't have metals in my body, and what do you mean? And I wasn't exposed to anything. And, you know, they're thinking this is sort of an extreme case, that they'd have to have been exposed to some kind of, source of something to get metals in their body. But what, how do metals get into our body and become toxic?
Well, that's a great question, and that's the $64,000 question. It's humans have always been exposed to heavy metals since the dawn.
Well, you mentioned the well water,
wells are terrible. I mean, I see nothing but problems from well water. City water, of course, they put aluminum in it to give it that crystal clear look. They put copper in city water as an antifungal agent. There are so many different ways to be exposed to metals, but the trouble is because they're invisible, because we don't necessarily taste them or smell them or see them, you know, we think that they're benign. We have lost touch with just how toxic these metals are, and yet they're so ubiquitous. If you look at agricultural sprays, for example, you know, some of them contain arsenic. If you look at what they feed chickens in the factory farms, in their formulas, they get arsenic, and then this arsenic can end up very easily in our water systems. So,
or cosmetics too, like. Deodorants and toothpaste and cosmetics, and hair dyes.
I mean, there was a show the other day talking about lipstick and the toxicity in lipstick still, that they still add heavy metals in lipstick. So I can't begin to tell you. I mean, we are just bombarded with metals in so many different aspects of our lives.
And so it takes us this long to accumulate, I mean, before someone shows symptoms of being sick, feeling tired, feeling like they can't do, you know, they can't get out of bed in the morning. They have these years behind them of this stuff accumulating in their systems. And I think what you said earlier was that, you know, to expect that this does take time. It takes time for those years of accumulation to restore.
Well, it can be since conception, you see, because if the mother was exposed to certain metals and has her minerals out of balance, then the fetus will as well. And so the baby can start off life biochemically imbalanced. And then, of course, because of the inherent weaknesses in the child, as the child ages, of course, and there's more exposure to other metals, then that, unfortunately, that child isn't going to live life to his or her fullest. I was talking to one of my other clients recently, and I was mentioning how I had a client once who had severe, severe anxiety, and she and her husband had renovated an old country home. And when she was peeling the paint off of the doors, it was leaded paint, of course. Here's another example where we're so incredibly innocent today. We don't realize, you know, when we use leaded paint, this stuff was very, very toxic. And she, not thinking about it, actually didn't wear a mask. And she was breathing in all this lead and then ended up with severe, severe anxiety. And I tested her hair, and, of course, she was loaded with lead. And of course, lead can really cause these kinds of emotional imbalances. So it's just amazing the different sources of metals that we can be exposed to. But we have to ask ourselves, Darla, why is it today? Okay, we've already determined that we're overexposed to metals today, right? More so than ever in the history of mankind. So we know that today from a contamination standpoint. But let's ask ourselves, the human body should have the capability to expel unwanted or excess metals. We should have the ability to keep our minerals in balance, essentially. But there's another phenomenon that I like to address that basically addresses why we have gotten so weak that we are losing or have minimized our ability to kick these metals out. And I think a lot of that happened after the low-fat lie hit the marketplace in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. Because what we need in order to stabilize our adrenal glands, in order to fuel our adrenal glands, is we need to have adequate amounts of animal fat in our diet. And eating enough animal fat in our diet stabilizes our blood sugar, which helps to relax our adrenal glands. Because once we put ourselves on a blood sugar roller coaster ride by eating too many carbohydrates, by waiting too long in between meals, by skipping meals, right, then the adrenal glands have to turn on because they're the backup system to controlling our blood sugar. And they shouldn't have to do that, Darla. So mm-hmm. the adrenal glands, to keep them at rest, essentially, we need to eat adequate amounts of animal fat in the day. And that's our ancestral wisdom. That's when we knew when we ate 3 square meals per day before World War II, for example, right, we were actually physically and mentally stronger back then than we are today. So we have to fuel those adrenal glands. We have to support the adrenal glands with adequate amounts of animal fat in the diet. But there's another factor in this, because the adrenal glands are responsible for controlling the balance of minerals in the body. And under that umbrella, that also means the adrenal glands are actually responsible for sending out a protein, essentially, in the body to grab at these excess or unwanted metals and escort them to bile, B-I-L-E, to your bile, so that the bile actually helps to get rid of these excess or unwanted metals. So now we see another relationship going on in why animal fat is so important in our diet, because animal fat, by default, should contain dietary cholesterol. And we need dietary cholesterol in order to produce bile. So if people are following a low-fat diet, then the adrenals become weak and bile becomes thick and sluggish and therefore becomes more prone to stoning. So now you have an entire bile duct system, which is like a roadmap. It's like an entire highway system in between your liver and your pancreas. So these stones can actually congest that area and block bile from descending and going into the small intestine to do various jobs, very important jobs, including escorting out the excess or unwanted metals. So when I think
without a high fat diet, we're in a situation with a congested elimination pathway. The typical elimination pathways are congested, so we can't move out the toxins.
That's right. So and that's the way Mother Nature designed it. Of course, our brains. If we look at the development of our brains, of course, we wouldn't be the intelligent beings that we are today had we not consumed adequate amounts of animal fat in the diet. And of course, since we've been consuming fewer animal foods in our diet, actually our brains are shrinking. They've actually shrunk by about 10%. So we need animal fat.
I know that you differ a little bit with Dr. Wilson on his approach to nutritional balancing, just in the sense of diet. You do something a little different there, and you go back to more of the traditional diet. So,
right.
So why don't we talk about that in a bit? That's a subject that's really interesting to me. But I want to just make sure that we cover these five prongs, and then one of them being diet. We'll explore that a little bit. So the first one of the five is what? Where should we start?
Okay, well, I think we touched on it briefly. It would be the testing and the initial test of your biochemistry in one simple hair analysis, and then matching your supplements to your biochemistry, but that requires monitoring. So under that first prong, that also includes retesting every 3 to 4 months so that we can, not number one, monitor your progress, monitor your level of compliance as well, but also make sure that you're on the correct supplement. So we have to continuously, match your biochemistry to the correct supplements. If people are cutting corners and they're not doing the retesting, unfortunately, the supplements that they may have initially been recommended could actually backfire on them. So it's really in everybody's best interest to do the retesting. I see nothing but problems when people don't do the retesting. It's very,
so every
very,
three
very
to
important.
Four months.
Pardon me?
Every 3 to 4 months to retest after the initial one.
Okay. You bet. So that's the first prong. And the second prong, let's just say, is the coffee enemas, because we want to make sure we're essentially, let's just say, toning or boosting liver gallbladder function. We have to do something to make sure you're producing bile, because when we stir up the hornet's nest by using these very powerful supplements, if you're not doing the coffee enemas, then unfortunately, as things like copper get stirred up and they can't find their way out through your bile, you're going to feel absolutely wretched. You're going to get these vicious what I call copper headaches, and it's almost like a metallic feeling in the brain. You'll know it's a copper headache. It's a very distinctive feeling, and you can take as many painkillers as you want, and generally the painkillers really don't make much of a dent in any kind of pain as long as it's based on the metals moving. So it's a very uncomfortable feeling, so it's in everybody's best interest.
The copper gets kicked up as part of the program, which is great. You want that copper to get kicked up and come out, but if it has trouble getting out of the body, then you're going to get these symptoms,
headaches. Headaches, nausea, skin conditions are very common as well when the copper in particular is on the move. So people can get boils, pimples, psoriasis, eczema. Little red dots are also commonly reported. So any kind of these kinds of symptoms are very, very common. Of course, even with women, of course, I'm going to hear that menstrual cycles are disrupted, and then they over time they normalize. So I could get some very peculiar symptoms surfacing based on the detox. Everybody has to be ready for almost any symptom, you see, when the detox is happening. I just got a client who emailed me and said she's going through shingles right now, unfortunately. So the poor thing is very painful, but I said it's probably part of the detox. You see, as the metals come up to the surface, of course, with them they can bring old infection as well. So almost anything is possible, whether it's in this recent case shingles, vaginal yeast infection, lung infection, ear infection, congestion in the nasal cavity. Almost any kind of infection is possible. People report back to me, too, that they commonly feel a cold coming on, or they may get a quote-unquote flu-like phase in the program as well. So if these things happen, you know, the nutritional balancing practitioners say you have to earn your detox. You have to earn it. And when you are going through these symptoms, yes, they feel horrible. I'm not minimizing that, but they are very necessary in terms of people making progress. I remember, you know, years ago when I didn't, back in the 90s when I was, you know, at my very, very worst, and I remember dumping a bunch of mucus once, and I was coming out of my nose in like a river, you know, and my practitioner at the time, who unfortunately didn't know anything about any of this kind of stuff, she said, "Oh, you're detoxing. This is really, really good." And I was getting rid of a whole bunch of mucus, thinking, "Oh, good, I'll get rid of all this toxicity and I'll come out of this and I'll feel better," right? Well, I didn't feel better. I never felt better through any of those types of detoxes. But when people are doing nutritional balancing and they're going through these sometimes rather hellish phases where you're feeling horrible, usually when people come out of these phases, they do notice that they're feeling better. So to me, that's a more realistic detox. It may be a subtle improvement, by the way, because I'm dealing with...
Yeah, and it's like you said earlier, it's the layers of the onion. I mean, you're one thing is coming up for healing at a time, and you're going through that process. And, of course, you have the support of the other prongs, which are helping, you know, because I've done detoxing in the past, and I've just, you know, crashed after. I didn't have the strength or whatever. I wasn't taking the supplements from nutritional balancing and the other support to help kind of round all that out.
Well, keep in mind, too, that even if people are going through this detox and they have to be honest with themselves, how much resting are you really doing? How much relaxing are you really doing? I know that there's people out there who are stuck in nutritional balancing, and they will report that they're very compliant when indeed they're really not very compliant, especially in the area of resting. I see a lot of people cutting corners in the resting prong of the program, and I can't emphasize enough how important it is to rest on the program, because if you're in constant stimuli mode, if you're listening to heavy rock, if you're on Facebook texting, if you're doing volunteer work at night, if you're busy doing potluck dinners on the weekends, you know, if you're just busy, 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 right, then those adrenals are not going to rest in order so that you can make progress. And in this fast new world that we live in, it's very difficult for people to surrender to that particular prong of the program. But I can tell you, when people are resting a lot, then I see some dramatic improvements in them. And I just want to give kudos out to one of my – I have a couple of clients who've gone to some extreme measures in order to rest. And I give kudos to one of my clients who he was living with his mother, whom he loves and adores, but he's never, ever been able to relax. You know, when I first met him, he was like bouncing off the walls. And I said to him, you have to rest. And he's a professional athlete, so he had to stop exercising. So I thought, there's no way I'm going to rope this guy in. And sure enough, he said, I'm so sick. Anything you tell me to do, Sergeant Pam, I'm going to do it, you know. And so he ended up moving out of his mother's house, and he bought a house down the street. So he could be alone for the first time in his life, get in touch with his feelings, force himself into rest mode. And he's really only been on the program for, I think, 2 months, and he's already showing some dramatic improvements. You know, within the first few days on the program, and he didn't even have the near-infrared sauna as yet, but he emailed me and he said, Pam, you're the only person I can tell this to. But he said, only 3 days of resting, doing two saunas, and it wasn't even the near-infrared sauna, it was just the sauna he had at his gym. By day three, he emailed me to tell me that he had his first normal bowel movement in years. And he was so excited. He was like a kid in a candy store, you know. He said, oh, my gosh, you know, because that's one of his main symptoms is the digestive distress. But he's calming, like he's been on the program for a couple of months. Things are happening, they're progressing. He does have a difficult time with the resting component. He does vocalize that to me. But he understands the importance of it. As long as you, I think, understand intellectually that you have to put those adrenal glands in a cast, like a broken arm or a broken leg, you have to visualize them and in this very static mode so that they can do their job, so that they can heal eventually. But if there's too much stimuli, then the adrenal glands are just going to heal at a much, much, much slower pace.
Yeah, and I see that. I see that a lot in my practice when I coach clients. I have a lot of tools that I use to work with clients to help them rest, because there's so much resistance to resting. I mean, people say, sure, I go to sleep at night, you know, I get 8 hours or whatever, but they're going, you know, the other however many hours in a day, and they just don't stop, and this, you know, the stimulation, and it's almost like we're just used to this level, and that sitting still and getting quiet is such a dramatic contrast.
It is. No, I'm glad you brought up that point. I think it's either Dr. Wilson or Dr. Eck who said originally that, you know, the sodium and the potassium ratio when it's under one, you know, these are people who have been chronically fatigued for decades in some cases and didn't even know it. You know, that the fatigue or the depression crept up on them very, very gradually and insidiously. And so with that low energy, some of these people you find are workaholics, that they just push and push and push themselves, and that is essentially their stimulant. It's not necessarily crack cocaine or sugar or caffeine. It's that they're moving, moving, moving all day long in order to try and push that sodium and potassium up. And unfortunately, it just keeps depleting and depleting and depleting them. So it's a vicious cycle.
So the actual act of going and going is the stimulant for them.
You bet.
Until it's not, until it stops. Yeah.
That's why with ADHD, with kids with ADHD, they on the surface, you know, are very hyperactive and they're bouncing off the walls. But if you look at their biochemistry, they're absolutely exhausted.
Yeah. An interesting paradox. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the third prong after the coffee enemas, would that be the rest? Or
it's the resting. So we insist on people getting about 9 hours of sleep a night. And I will say that 95% of my clients have disrupted sleep patterns. So I use some strategies to help them sleep during the night and to stay asleep during the night. So just a few of those strategies would be, of course, eating animal fat before they go to bed at night, taking a pinch of salt before they go to bed at night, taking the Paramin, which should be part of the program. I mean, if you take a cheaper CalMag supplement, it might help, but I really don't see cheap CalMag supplements working anywhere near as well as the Paramin. They also need to do strategies during the day to calm them down. So this goes into what we were just talking about earlier, learning to say no, learning to set boundaries, having some more me time, just taking mm-hmm. that societal pressure off of you that you have to be superwoman or superman. You can't do it,
Yeah.
Humans essentially evolved, over 99% of our human history, anthropologists have looked back and said, we probably only worked about 17 hours a week. And if we ran, we only ran for 2 to 3 minutes at a time, and it was to eat or avoid getting eaten. So we really never stressed our adrenal glands that much, right? Not like we are today. I mean, I look back at my years in university and, getting up at 6 in the morning, going to the pool, doing laps in the pool for 45 minutes, then going to the gym and doing 2 aerobics classes in a row and doing all this crazy exercise. And I didn't realize how counterproductive it was. It was actually draining my batteries. It wasn't building my batteries at all.
Yeah, I had to stop exercising, actually. At some point, I was on the treadmill and realizing that my body was going into fight or flight from being on the treadmill, and I couldn't. So I was getting more drained, more exhausted, not helping myself mm-hmm. at all by doing that. But yeah, so I just want to back up the animal fat, which we're going to talk a little bit more about once we get to the diet prong. The pinch of salt, what is that for?
Well, salt is a natural hypnotic. It's a relaxant. Mm-hmm. Sugar is a stimulant to the adrenals. Mm-hmm. Salt counteracts that. Salt is actually a relaxant. Helps the adrenal glands relax. So you'll see a lot of people who are in adrenal burnout mode, they crave either sugar or salt. One is used to stimulate the adrenals. The other is to, relax the adrenal glands. Because that's the paradox of adrenal burnout is people feel wired and tired, right? Mm-hmm. And so it depends on, their stress levels. It depends on the time of the day. But some people do crave the salt. But it is good if people are having trouble sleeping at night to take a little salt before they go to bed.
And
it
you
might
said
help
the Paramin. I'm sorry, the Paramin. That's a supplement. That's part of the program, but it's largely made up of magnesium?
Calcium and magnesium.
Calcium and magnesium, yeah. Okay.
But so Dr. Eck was very fussy. He was very fussy over these formulas. So the type of the mineral and the ratio of the mineral is very meaningful in terms of the effects of the supplement. So there's something very magical about the Paramin. I don't see other CalMag supplements working anywhere near as well.
Okay, and the irony of people who are exhausted is that they often, and I had this, fortunately I don't so much anymore, but in the past I had real issues sleeping, and so I'm really tired, really burnt out, and I can't sleep at night, and that's just frustrating.
Well, and that's the common complaint, so everybody knows. I mean, I had debilitating insomnia for well over a decade, and I was lucky some weeks if I slept 6 hours a week. I didn't mm-hmm. understand, though, what was causing it, right? So people are all out trying melatonin, they're trying this, they're trying that, when really the problem is this inner sepsis or contamination that's stuck in our bodies. And so since the adrenal glands are sending out signals, they have to be, they're under stress essentially when we have trapped copper, lead, mercury, aluminum, whatever the case may be, because the adrenal glands are in the stress mode saying, get it out, right? And so when you have this inner contamination going on, then the adrenal glands are in, essentially fight or flight mode 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And I equate that to running away from a lion, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So when you're running away from a lion, there's no time for sleeping, eating, or sex. So essentially, mm-hmm. those three systems break down. So when you're running away from a lion, the last thing you want to do is sleep. unfortunately, you know, we have to appreciate, you know, this subconscious thing that's going on in our body that's putting us into this fight or flight mode. And we have to do things to relax the adrenal glands, to train them to relax while we're getting rid of this inner sepsis.
Right. So it does get, I mean, that's initially a lot of people's complaints, but it does get better on the program. And, of course, I like to think that the tools that I teach, you know, which are not necessarily about nighttime sleep, but they are stress management and relaxation and resting, that they, like you're saying, they're training the body to learn how to do that. It's a skill at this point to learn.
Yeah,
how to
no,
do
it's,
that.
It takes a lot of discipline to try and put yourself into a state of relaxation. Now, I do not set any absolutes for my clients because when I look at their calcium and their magnesium ratio and levels, right, I know that they can't focus for the most part, right? I know these people would have a tough time meditating. They would have a tough time focusing on a candle or a mantra or some music, or they would have a tough time reading a book. I mean, there's just no focus in the brain. There's so much brain fog and so much disruption up there that I don't expect them to do these types of disciplines, essentially, because it requires discipline to focus, right?
Right.
So I actually tell most of my clients to do things like watch a comedy, watch a documentary, perhaps
right.
watch some nice, quiet, not violent sports, you know, some quiet sports, you know, things that don't get your adrenals too much in a you know, frenzy or whatever. So, you know, you have to pick and choose things accordingly. I want you to enjoy whatever it is you might be watching on television. But the nice thing about television is that there is a beginning and an end. It's not like the Internet. Mm-hmm. It's not like Facebook, right? And on Facebook,
right.
you're absorbing other people's problems and, you know, all this kind of stuff and dwelling on things and so on. But, you know, the Internet is a blessing and a curse. But with television, especially when I'm dealing with Internet addicts or whatever, you know, television has a beginning and an end.
Mm-hmm.
You watch a show, there's a beginning
right.
and an end. Hopefully people can use television in a more responsible manner than some people I know who are using the Internet. I see some people who are on that Internet, and it's like, whoa, you know, discipline yourselves. Don't spend
so funny, because
you know,
I'm
so
glad
time.
That you said that. I didn't have a TV for years, and I joked with people that I really, you know, all my friends were like, I got to stop. We're cutting out TV, and we're not going to watch TV anymore. And I was like, no, I want to get a TV, because I need to be lying on the couch watching TV, not on the Internet, not working till 11 o'clock at night. You know, I need to stop at some point. So that's... I'm glad you said that. We can watch more TV.
Yeah, I tell all my clients, I say, get Netflix, do something, because I want you to be a couch potato while you're healing.
A couch potato.
And I want to get you off. I want to find a way for you to moderate your time on the Internet. I'm not against the Internet, obviously, but I think that there's a lot of irresponsible use of the Internet, especially when people are looking to stimulate their adrenal glands and they feel lousy, right? They're going to go, because you see, the thing about the Internet is this reward system in the brain, the dopamine release, right? So, and they see people running the Internet, they know how to manipulate humans by giving this kind of reward every time they get an email or they click on something that they're looking for. You get a reward. That's a vicious cycle of addiction, you see. And so when people are feeling blah, when they're flatliners or, you know, they're not getting all the zest out of life, and they sit in front of the Internet and they're clicking on an email message or clicking on a site where they're looking for information, right, they get a dopamine release, so they feel better. And now you can't necessarily get them off the Internet because these clicks that they're making are giving them a reward. But how do you, when somebody has depression or fatigue and they're sitting on that Internet for, you know, 7-8 hours a day, and they're really not necessarily seeing an end, you know what I mean? Like, they're just stuck there.
Yeah.
And they're overstimulating their adrenal glands. Whereas if you're watching something calming on television and you're relaxing and you're escaping this horrible feeling, because on the Internet, too, people are always, you know, especially with the chronic fatigue and the depression, is that they can be fueling each other's depression or fatigue as well. And the thoughts, I'm sure, the words, a lot of the conversations are rather negative. So if you're in front of the TV, you have more control over picking something positive, picking something funny, picking something that's informative, you know, and there's a beginning and an end on top of that.
Good. Okay, so be a couch potato for a while.
You bet.
So let's move on to number four. What is the fourth prong?
Well, that's the near-infrared sauna.
Okay.
So the near-infrared sauna, very important, and people can just Google in near-infrared sauna. Make sure it's not a far-infrared sauna. You want to get a near-infrared sauna. And Dr. Wilson has the plans for free on the Internet. And at home, all you need is some sort of enclosure, whether it's a closet or a stand-up shower, a tent. You know, you could actually build a makeshift fort out of blankets like a 10-year-old child would. You know, there's all sorts of ways to vary how you can make your enclosure. The actual portable near-infrared sauna unit is the actual size of maybe a medium-sized suitcase, so it's not going to take up a lot of room. It's not very expensive to build it, but the premise is, actually, it's a twofold reason why people should be doing the near-infrared sauna. Number one, because the sauna actually helps to pull the metals out through the skin, and number two, it's forcing you to be in a parasympathetic state, which, as we mentioned earlier, Darla, that may not be very natural for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So if you can put yourself in a nice, relaxed state in front of the lamps, which they are very relaxing, then that's at least, hopefully, 20 minutes of the day where you're going to feel relaxed. But bear in mind that depending on the level of tolerance, depending on how sick you are, you may only handle 5 minutes in the sauna to get started, okay? So people need to listen to their bodies. If you're crashing after you have the sauna and you've been in there for 15 minutes, go back down, go to 5 minutes, and just stay at 5 minutes until you're feeling stronger and maybe build up to 20 minutes in the sauna. There are two biochemical types that can't stay in the sauna for more than 20 minutes typically, okay? And these would be your fast oxidizers and people in a 4-low pattern. And, of course, children do the saunas, but they do them for maybe 10 or 15 minutes at the most, depending on their age. So, at any rate, just people be very sensitive and don't sit too close to the lamps so that you're burning your skin. So you probably want to be about 3 feet away from the lamps. And then you have all these diehard people, though, Darla, that don't really care if they crash. And they may go in the sauna for an hour.
Mm.
But these are people who are typically at home on disability, sick anyway. So they really don't care if they crash. It's not necessary to do that to yourself. It's probably not even wise to do that to yourself. But, you know, just be moderate with the saunas if you can. And try not to push too terribly hard. What people tend to do is if there's a time factor, Darla, people prioritize, I notice anyway, my clients tend to prioritize the coffee enemas. And they'll do, in many cases, my clients are doing more than one coffee enema a day. And they may just do, you know, 20 minutes in the sauna. So they may do the one sauna a day, but multiple coffee enemas in the day, depending on how much time they have and depending on how much the detox is affecting them.
Okay. Okay, and so the last one then, the fifth prong.
That's the three square meals. So I ask people, I think I've got this right, Darla? The three square meals.
Yeah.
If I reiterate, it's the testing and matching supplements. It's resting, near-infrared sauna therapy, and coffee enemas, and now we're talking about the three square meals.
Right, the three
I don't
square
think,
meals.
I think I disrupted the order, but at any rate.
Yep.
So three square meals, and why I do things differently than Dr. Wilson. And the differences are actually, you know, relatively subtle. If people follow ARL's dietary guidelines or what Dr. Wilson says, you know, they're still going to get results. But I think that for me, what makes more sense in terms of translating healthy eating to people, I think it makes more sense to use something very tangible like three square meals. Because here in North America, we were known as the land of three squares before World War II. We were known as the land of three squares. And what that meant was before World War II, we didn't have things like fat phobia or cholesterol phobia. So three square meals would have meant that we would have gotten about 70% of our calories from animal fat. So we know when we ate lots of animal fat regularly, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner throughout the day, we were much, much healthier than we are now. And we have, since World War II, of course, we have strayed from the three square meal model to eating more like, you know, we're skipping breakfast, we're eating low fat, we're completely eating a diet that's diametrically opposed to the way we would have eaten in the past. So there's no guesswork. I don't like fad diets because fad diets mean there's no historical reference to prove that they're actually healthy. When we ate three square meals per day, we know we were healthy, period. Right? Yeah. We're really, really healthy. And so, there's a track record, there's a history of it. When I get my clients to return to eating 3 square meals a day, even if they're not on nutritional balancing, they report invariably that they're feeling better, that they have more energy,
yeah.
Right? They start eating more animal fat. They start feeling better. They start having, better sleeps at night. They feel happier. They have more energy, whatever. They just feel better. Animal fat
yeah.
makes people happy.
That was a necessity for me. 10 years ago when I was in a real bad burnout, I found finally after, years of searching and doctors didn't know what was going on, and I called this doctor, and I think she was in Cape Cod, and she said to start eating meat. That was the first thing she said to me, and I don't think I was at the time. I think I was eating tempeh and soy and tofu, God knows what. And as soon as I started eating meat, it was like a difference of day and night. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no,
and
I see that
since
a lot.
Then, I've discovered Weston Price, and I know that, in listening to other interviews you've done, that you're an advocate of the Weston Price, which we also refer to as traditional foods or ancestral diet.
Mm-hmm.
I eat a lot of, bone broth, and I'm actually doing a blog post soon about the bone broth that I make. And of course, I get a lot of pushback from people. How could you eat that fat? What are you doing? This is cholesterol. It's going to, because that's the big thing. I mean, people are terrified of eating fat.
That's right. Yeah, it defies logic, of course, because, in the history of mankind, we always ate lots of animal fat in the diet. But that's what clever marketing, unfortunately, has done to us. It's essentially, the machine, the marketing machine that came forward to demonize animal fat and cholesterol. It came essentially from the edible oil industry. So in the field of nutrition, there's a phenomenon called negative nutrition. If you just Google that term in, you'll see it's a formal term that they use in the food marketing industry. And they use negative nutrition like politicians would in terms of slamming each other so that they can gain the vote. So the more that they can criticize their opponent, then they will pick themselves up and get the vote. Well, the food industry has been doing this for decades, if not centuries. So they know that when they demonize pork or shellfish or they demonize red meat, then other foods are going to sell, you see. So it's a very, very clever and very effective tool. They know it works, but it doesn't necessarily make us healthier. In fact, since this new campaign, the negative nutrition campaign around animal fats and red meat and eggs and butter and everything like that, since this negative nutrition campaign, snowballed into what it is today, of course, it's only meant all sorts of chronic disease and mental disorders on society. It's a very terrible, devious, and dangerous misinformation campaign that has been coming forward now for, decades. And so I call, the low-fat lie the multi-trillion-dollar lie, because in scaring us off of animal fats, of course, not only has this led to all sorts of mental instability in society, it's also led to the rise of chronic diseases, things like, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and so on.
Well, I think what you said earlier really helped explain it for me, and I could talk to you about this for a long time. I love this topic, but you had said the adrenal glands are working hard to stabilize the blood sugar, and also, that the animal fat helps with the stability, and that makes a lot of sense to me. It helps provide, because I know it makes sense to me. It was also my experience that I always had hypoglycemia, and my blood sugar would drop, and I'd feel awful, and it wasn't until I ate some form of animal fat or protein that I was able to recover from that
mm-hmm.
feeling, and it worked. I kept doing it. So
yeah, I show a graph in my book, from Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, and I use it in my seminars. I show a graph from the 1960s, but it could have ostensibly been a graph that would have been very similar in the 40s, before World War II. And it shows how religious we were about eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We would get up and have breakfast at 7 in the morning. We would eat lunch at noon, and we would eat dinner at 6 o'clock. I mean, it was just what everybody did. And, to skip breakfast or to eat on the run, it was unheard of until our recent history, really. And so we have to return to these very basic eating habits, and because we know when we
eat
that way,
this is something you see more of. I was just thinking of a book that I had read about French parenting, and the woman who's an American talks about not giving your kids so many snacks, and especially the carbohydrate snacks, you know, the ones that just spike the blood sugar and it drops. And she was saying in France, you know, basically the whole country has the same eating schedule. They eat at 8 a.m., 12 noon, they have a snack at, you know, 4, and they eat at 8, dinner.
Yeah.
And so they all eat at the same time. It's this similar to what I guess you're saying with the pre-sugar
right.
meals. And, of course, we know that French eat that.
Well, I lived in France. I mean, I was a French major at university, and I lived in France, and I did some of my university in Quebec City. So I was very immersed in the French culture. And so, yes, indeed, I mean, in the morning, absolutely, you know, but we ate lots of animal fat for breakfast. We ate lots of animal fat at lunch, and the lunch was 2 hours long, so there was a siesta as well. At 4 o'clock, the children got le goûter, which was a snack, and, you know, typically, yes, like what I noticed the kids were eating, this was in the 80s, of course, is they were getting pastry and things like that, but the pastry would have been made with animal fat back then.
Cream,
still.
Yeah, cream.
Lots of cream and butter
yeah.
or what have you. And then, yes, the meal would have been at 7. The dinner meal was about 7 o'clock, perhaps 8 o'clock at night, and they would eat a lot of raw cheese and salad and so on. Their main meal, though, Darla, would have been at noon. That was their heaviest meal of the day, and then they ate lightly early evening.
Mm-hmm.
But animal fat was involved in every single meal, no question.
Right. Well, I know there's a lot of information out there about diets, and people get so confused, and I myself have spent probably 10 years trying to figure out what the heck to eat, and, you know, going from all kinds of extremes, but I'm glad to finally have a raw. I feel like I came home. I mean, I found this traditional foods way of eating, and it resonates with me. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be posting more on my blog about those, you know, some recipes and some food ideas. And I know that there's tons of information on your website from Weston Price and the principles of eating a traditional foods diet.
Yeah, and it's really just I ask my clients if they see any discrepancies between what I say, what Dr. Price may say, or Sally Fallon from the Weston A. Price Foundation, if people see any variance from that, I ask people always to default to, you know, the Weston Price principles, because mm-hmm. I do believe that even my slow oxidizer should be eating adequate amounts of animal fat in the diet. The only time, Darla, that I would reduce animal fat in the diet is if somebody's having very severe digestive issues, especially pain under the rib cage, which is indicative, of course, of the gallbladder area. There's probably a lot of congestion. They probably can't handle a lot of animal fat. So people have to sometimes gradually, very slowly, reintroduce animal fat in the diet. So that's sometimes a variable that you have to take into account on a person-by-person basis. And I encourage my people to eat a lot of red meat in the diet. I don't ask them to minimize it to once a week, especially, of course, if they can get red meat from a pasture-raised source, that's the gold standard. And I do encourage my clients to eat things like raw sauerkraut, pickles, apple cider vinegar, and the like, simply because as we get sick, our intestinal tract tends to move towards a more alkaline pH, and we need to retrain it, essentially, to become acidic. And so we have to put these acid-forming foods in our gut, I think, to help alleviate a lot of the stress, simply because the pH is so off. I'm not saying that the gut becomes alkaline. I'm just saying it moves towards a more alkaline pH. So things like raw sauerkraut, pickles, apple cider vinegar, and the like, of course, they are all going to help create the correct acidity, or at least create some acidity in the gut to help support your digestion. And remember, you know, when you look at a probiotic like Acidophilus, the first four letters are ACID, acid. So we need to stimulate the correct ecology of the gut so that these friendly organisms do want to thrive and survive.
Yeah. Well, I would love to talk to you in the future, again, sometime more on the topic of food and diet. That's my passion. I love that. But I want to thank you for the time that you spent today talking to us, because I know this is going to help a lot of people listening to this. It's like we said earlier, it's a complex topic, and I want to help break it down, and you know, people want to understand it, and I think this is a really good presentation, so I'm thrilled to be putting this out there.
No, I'm glad to be here. It's you know, I know a lot of this information could leave people with more questions than answers, but just I just encourage people to please stick with the program. For this program to be successful, it rides on the shoulders of the client. We know when people follow the program as outlined, we see nothing but success. We see fabulous improvements in people. So the two other key components that I instill in my clients is the importance of compliance and patience. Compliance and patience.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what, you know, that's what I first learned about when I heard about nutritional balancing, is that for the first time in 10 years that I was always looking for an answer, people were really, really getting help through this program, really healing and having amazing results. So I'm excited to be learning about it and to helping my clients and whoever's listening to be learning about it. So thank you, Pam.
Thank you so much for having me, Darla.
Okay, we'll talk again soon. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.